I call the meeting of the House Ways and Means Committee to order and note for the record that a quorum is present. And the first order of business will be the approval of the minutes from January 17, 2023. Vice Chair Edelson, would you like to make a motion?
So moved, Madam Chair.
All those in favor of approval of the minutes from January 17th, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, please say nay. The motion prevails and the amendments are adopted. So the plan for today is we are going to hear the first three bills on the agenda, which would be House File 50, House File 207, and House File 29 this morning. Then we will recess and come back approximately 15 minutes after session, up to maybe 30. Just I will make an announcement during announcements on the floor. We'll get an email out, but we'll keep in touch with you just based on how long floor session goes, because several of the bills need their committee reports need to be processed and then give folks enough time to get our packets ready and whatnot before we come back. But I will be in touch on the House floor as well as with a email to all the committee members from Owen. Great. So with that, our first bill on the day, first bill for today is House File 50, Representative Hansen's bill, and I'm going to ask that Vice Chair Edelson make a motion that House File 50 be re-referred to the General Register. Representative Edelson.
So moved.
Wonderful. And Representative Hansen, you have an amendment to your bill, the A2. Would you like to move, should we move that for you first
yes.
and get the bill in the shape you'd like?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, if you could move that.
Representative Edelson, would you like to move the A2 amendment?
Yes, please, Madam Chair.
All right. Any discussion to the A2 amendment? All those in favor of the A2, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, please say nay. No. The motion prevails and the A2 amendment is adopted. So, Representative Hansen, to House File 50 as amended, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. House File 50 is the 2022 lands bill. And the amendment that we just adopted was needed. It was a retroactive provision to make sure that was what one section was St. Louis County would be applicable. This is a good example of, a bill that was agreed to last year in the omnibus House or the omnibus environment finance bill, but that did not make it to the floor. So lands bills used to be fairly routine. They need to be done every year. This is the 2022 bill, the first of several bills that will be coming to you of things that were done last year, passed in the House, but didn't come forward in a conference report. This is the sale of public lands. It generates money for the state, and it sells some of those public lands that the DNR has. It has a couple of other provisions in it, but the fiscal impact is it actually raises money. Estimated, I'll just go through that for the fiscal component. Section 12 will raise about $186,000. Section 13, $2,000. Section 14, $38,500. Hennepin County private land sale, zero. Itasca County public land sale, $1.3 million. Pine County, $3,000. Sherbourne County private land, $1,000. So Lori Klein from the Minnesota DNR is available for questions. The total amount raised is $1.575 million. There will be, I want to be clear, there will be another lands bill. Members and those of you who are new members, we will be sending out an email later in session if there are other land provisions that need to be put into a 2023 lands bill, and hopefully we can be back on course in passing these annually in a routine manner. So I would ask for your support.
Great. Discussion to House File 50 as amended. Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Chair. It looks like there's plenty of controversial stuff coming to this committee, but this is not yet. Thank you.
Wonderful. Any further discussion? Representative Hansen, any last word?
I'd ask for your support.
Wonderful. So Representative Edelson renews her motion that House File 50 as amended be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say nay. The motion prevails and House File 50 is, as amended, is referred to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Hansen.
Thank you.
And the next bill on the calendar for today is House File 207. So, Representative Tabke, welcome to the committee. So, Vice Chair Edelson, would you like to motion that House File 207 be referred to the General Register?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Wonderful. So, with that, we have House File 207 in front of us. Representative Tabke, to your bill.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Minnesota local ecosystems supporting native birds, insects, and other species are collapsing here and throughout the United States. For example, Minnesota State Bee, the rusty patch bumblebee, has seen an 80% decline in population in the last 20 years and was subsequently added to the endangered species list in 2017. And most native bee species are suffering a similar fate. Further, monarch butterflies have suffered an 80% decline in the last 30 years, and we have lost 2.9 million birds since 1970. This is a major concern for Minnesotans. And to combat this local ecosystem collapse, the Minnesota legislature authorized the wildly popular Lawns to Legumes program in 2019. Since it began, Lawns to Legumes has received an astounding 17,707 grant applications, with over 12,000 of those grant applications being denied due to lack of funding. And so Lawns Legumes provides up to a $350 per household reimbursable grants, education, and technical assistance for homeowners and communities throughout Minnesota to install and maintain native plantings. And so Lawns Legumes grants are awarded with an emphasis on providing habitat for rusty patch bumblebee, rebuilding local ecosystems, and focusing on underserved communities. So I ask for your vote today in support of House File 207, appropriating $2 million in each of the next 2 years to support Lawns Legumes program. And this appropriation could fund over 11,000 grants installing native pollinator plants in this popular award-winning Lawns to Legumes program. So I look for your support. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Tappy. And just to note, there's no fiscal note because the appropriations are straightforward in the bill. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Tappy, those grants that have come around so far and have been approved, do we have any idea on how many acres or square feet or how much that actually put into a pollinating habitat?
Representative Tappy.
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Petersburg. So the original, the phase one of the program, so it's currently in phase two of the program, and what this would be doing is authorizing phase three of it. But phase one alone had 2,252 plantings that were completed, which is 3.5 million square feet of native plants.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. How many was that? 3 million what?
Representative Tappy.
Madam Chair, Representative Petersburg, it's 3.5 million square feet, so about 80 acres of native plants. 2,252 individual projects and 27 neighborhood demonstration projects.
Thank you.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Chair. I don't, yeah, I'm not going to go through a number of the questions today, but just one thing that I was wondering about, Representative. This program, while it seems to, in your presentation, sound like it's been very successful, there's certainly questions. One of them that I have is it's been funded from a variety of sources over the course of the last few years. Now suddenly it doesn't seem to be fundable in those traditional sources, as I mentioned. Now we're going to the general fund. Why couldn't it be successful at the LCCMR or other places where we don't have to protect those revenues, the general fund revenues? We've got lots of programs funded through those, through legacy and such, but not able to do that now?
Representative Tabke.
Madam Chair, Representative Heinzman, so we want this to go through the general fund so that it can be consistent long-term funding for this program. It has now been, as I mentioned, there's a significant demand for this really popular program, so we want to make sure that it is, for the next few years, very understandable that it is something that will be available for folks to be able to use, because a lot of times when you're adding native plants and things to a landscape, it's a longer term process. It's not just a two-week planting and done. So we need to have education and support materials for that. So,
Representative Feinstein.
Thank you, Chair. Just a comment. if this lawns to legumes program was as great as it's being touted to be, I would suggest that it would have lots of support at the LCCMR. I see that Chair Lilly is here, or at Legacy, but it is not. And so here we are tapping the general fund.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Tapke, are these the implementation of this program and the people that have taken on this one of these projects, I guess? Do you have a map of where all those different locations are, and is it concentrated in metro areas? What's that map look like, if you could let us know?
Representative Tapke.
Madam Chair, Representative Scott, yes, there's absolutely a map of everywhere the projects are done, and they are definitely all across the state. They are done in every county in the state of Minnesota. These projects have been, this grant program has been utilized for that, so it's being done everywhere. And there are two factors that are very important in how the grants are awarded. One, there's an overlay map of where Rusty Patch Bumblebee has been known to be located in the past, and another one is where projects like this have not been done, so an equity issue to making sure that we are doing that across the state. So there's two factors, and the first is making sure that we are supporting that native habitat.
Representative Scott.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Tapke, what metrics are you using for success?
What metric? Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Scott, what success, like, how do you mean?
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Tapke, what metrics are you using to measure the success of this program?
Representative Tapke.
Madam Chair, Representative Scott, so the success of this program is along with what Representative Petersburg just asked, is we are installing and maintaining significant square footage and acres of native plant material across the state of Minnesota. And so that is the success of getting that in and getting those long-term and making sure that we are teaching people how to maintain those landscapes so that they're successful into the future.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so Representative Tapke, to me, that's not a measurable metric. But if you're trying to get more pollinators, more birds, are you measuring that as well? How will we know if this program's affecting what its stated goal was?
Representative Tapke.
Madam Chair and Representative Scott, so we know through a significant amount of research that's out there today that anytime, no matter even small little 10 by 10 areas where native plants are installed in Minnesota, that they are attracting caterpillars, birds, bees, pollinators, butterflies of all sizes. So we know that that happens as a direct result of installing native plants. And so the more native plants that we install in Minnesota, the better off we're going to be.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks.
Further discussion to House File 207. Seeing no further discussion, Representative Tadke, last word on your bill.
Thank you very much for your hopeful support on this bill. It does a lot of great things for Minnesota.
Wonderful. So with that, Vice Chair Edelson renews her motion that House File 207 be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say nay.
No.
The motion prevails and House File 207 is re-referred to the General Register. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
And our next bill on the calendar for the day is House File 29, Representative Hewitt. Welcome to the committee, Representative Hewitt. And so being you are not on this committee, I am going to have Representative Becker Finn make a motion that House File 90 be re-referred to, or excuse me, House File 29 be referred to the General Register. That would be my motion. Thank you. And with that, Representative Hewitt, could you please discuss your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for hearing this in Ways and Means this morning. This bill has been before many of us. Most people are seasoned on this committee, I can see. This is the Attorney General funding bill for pretty much for outstate, but I was just talking to the staff over there, and it also helps many of our metro counties, too, when they're in trouble, such as my own county or even Carver County has used this service. The problem is it's an unfunded mandate is what I also found out, because it's in statute that the Attorney General from the state has to help our counties, and we have not funded this. So moving forward, basically what the bill is, it's asking for funding for the next ongoing funding of basically $2 million and $2 million in the legs. And then also, additionally, to start this year, we're asking for 270, I have to get the number here, sorry.
$269,000.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So that's basically what the bill is in short, and this is much needed. Out of our 87 counties in Minnesota, 44 work with only 3 attorneys. That's a big load, and when they get a murder trial, that could really slow things up. Now, I know that counties share each other, and they ask Dakota or Hennepin or some of the bigger counties to come and help. They don't have the resources either anymore. They need to worry about their own caseload. So I ask the committee to support the bill. Move forward.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. And as noted, no fiscal note needed on this bill, as well as the appropriations are straightforward in the language of the bill. Discussion to House File 29. And Nash, would you like to go first? Just to be clear, Representative Nash, I have you and I have some more folks. Would you rather be last or first?
I think if Representative Crecia wanted to go first, that's fine.
Okay.
I'll finish up for us.
Sounds great. Representative Crecia.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hewitt, thanks for the bill. Just a quick question. So would you be able to get some type of commitment that the Attorney General would actually use the money to go after things like fraud versus our schools for their shaming that doesn't exist?
Representative Crecia, I believe that it's pretty clear what the money will be used for in the bill. You know, and if there's fraud that needs to be prosecuted, you'll have to use it for that. But this is used for outreach in our areas where they do not have the support. Thank you for the question, though, Madam Chair.
Representative Crecia.
No further question.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm glad to see the Attorney General's in the audience today. Thank you for being here. And I'm wondering if I could ask a few questions of the Attorney General, since he's in the room, about what the money's being used for. Because unlike what Representative Hewitt just said, it's really not clear. It says criminal enforcement and related initiatives. That's pretty vague, so I'm just wondering if Attorney General Ellison could come forth and kind of give us an idea of what that means.
Attorney General Ellison will come forward and answer a few questions. Thank you for being here, Attorney General.
Madam Chair,
welcome to the committee, and thank you, and introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you. My name is Keith Ellison. I'm the Attorney General for the state of Minnesota. And also I'd like to let you know that our Chief Deputy, the head of criminal, David Voigt, is here as well. So if I need to pull him in, I'll be happy. Yeah, I hope that'll be allowed as well. Well, Madam Chair, I'm prepared to answer any question.
Right. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so thank you, Mr. Attorney General. The language of the bill is a little bit vague. It just says for enhanced criminal enforcement and related initiatives. Could you elaborate and let us know what that terminology means?
Attorney General.
Madam Chair, Representative, for the last 157 years, the Attorney General's office has assisted counties in prosecuting cases when they needed to. Under Minnesota statute 8.01, we can be referred by counties cases to prosecute. We do it all the time. It's something that we do routinely. Since I've been Attorney General, we've done about 33. We can do many more. And counties ask us to take these cases on, and we prosecute them regularly. So it is for criminal, because when I arrived at the office 4 years ago, there was only one full-time criminal prosecutor. I enhanced it to 3, but that's about all I can do without taking from other programs. So we're asking to return to how the Attorney General used to assist counties. So it will be for criminal prosecution. That's what it will be for. It's supported by the County Attorneys Association. They're expecting that if this money is appropriated, we'll be there to help them. And we attend their meetings regularly and are in communication with them regularly. And we'd be more than happy to. Does that answer your question, Representative?
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Attorney General. partially. So this specific funding is just for helping the counties with criminal prosecution, and that alone.
Attorney General Ellison.
Madam Chair, yes.
Okay. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So criminal enforcement, enhanced criminal enforcement and related initiatives. What might those related initiatives be, Madam Chair and Mr. Attorney General?
Attorney General Ellison.
Madam Chair, so this is for criminal prosecution. This is what it's for. That's what we'll be doing with the money. We'll be hiring more. We'll be hiring prosecutors and paralegals to assist counties when they have the overload. Now, in related prosecutions, well, quite honestly, I think that that language really is there to accommodate the fact that there are times when we may have to do involuntary commitments for sexually dangerous predators. That's technically a civil matter. There might be, so that would be something involved that would be other related matters. But what we do for the counties are we do appeals for them. We handle their sexually dangerous predator cases, and we do direct district court criminal prosecution. That would be 100% of what this money is used for.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Moeller.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Attorney General Ellison, for being here. So I worked in the criminal division of the AG's office for about 13 years, and those are exactly the duties I performed. I did trial work. My main job was doing criminal appeals, and I also did some civil commitments of sexually dangerous people, SDP and SPP commitments, because that is the work of that division. I cannot tell you how strongly this work is supported by counties across the state. Most of the appeals I did were for greater Minnesota cases. There used to be a time when you could name a county and I would immediately tell you who that county attorney was, because I handled so many of those cases across the state. And the same thing is true for the trial team. They will actually go and embed themselves in the county if they're, especially in like a first degree murder trial. David Voigt, who's here, was my manager for a time being, has been at the AG's office for a long time. And I can tell you that these attorney generals work very closely with the county attorneys and the cases that they're called in to prosecute. And when that division was cut well before your time, AG Ellison, there was an outcry from county attorneys across the state because of the cuts to that division and the amount of workload then that was increasing, especially on those small rural counties in these big cases. It is a highly professional team, and I cannot support this strongly enough. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Moeller. Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair Olson. Thank you for being here, Attorney General Ellison. My question, first one's really quick. Do you see any change in your mission? Will this be something where it will be on the request of the local county attorney's office to come in? Or do you see the state attorney general's office taking over cases?
Attorney General Ellison.
Madam Chair, we are statutorily prohibited from taking over cases. Every single case we get is a request from the counties. That is the right way. That is the proper way it should be. I'll just note for everyone that the 87 county attorneys that we have in the state of Minnesota are elected. They're elected to prosecute cases. But Minnesota Statute 8.01 recognizes that we have a lot of counties where you have two or three county attorneys at the entire office. And so if you get a murder in that office, you know, even if the county attorney has the experience to do it, and a lot of times they don't, but even if they do, somebody still has to staff the county board meeting. Somebody still has to do the condemnation proceedings. Somebody still has to do the child support cases. And the office still has to function. So the legislature, in its wisdom, many, many years ago, passed Minnesota Statute 8.01 to say that a county attorney can ask the attorney general to support them if they need so. And it's driven by the county attorney.
Representative Novotny.
Thank you. I just want to get that clarification. The second question that I have, you described several of the situations where you are currently assisting counties, as described by Representative Moeller on the civil commitments, things that the state is dealing with and on their part that they're already statutorily mandated to do. You've described several that you had, I believe it was 20-some cases that you assisted with. aside from the civil commitments, aside from the things that we're dealing with, like sexual offenders, what cases has your office prosecuted?
Attorney General Ellison.
Madam Chair, Representative, I'd be happy to give you a list of every case. I don't have them all memorized. That's why I have a deputy who manages that. But I'll give you a taste of a few of them. We prosecuted somebody who shot off 80 rounds in Albert Lee, shot a police officer, in fact. And but for that officer's protective vest, we could have lost him. This was a horrific case. We convicted the defendant in that. Another one where I believe Todd County, you had a former Viking who was beloved in his community and his wife, both of whom were elderly people, murdered by their son who absconded to Mexico. We prosecuted that case. We recently prosecuted cases in Clearwater County, Carlton County, Pennington County. I mean, we're busy. I can give you a definitive list of every case, but they're all cases where there are victims who are grieving, who are devastated and brokenhearted because of the tragedy that they faced, and they need justice, and we're here to help.
Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair. Also, one final question. How is the spread of these cases put out? And I realize you have the list that you can't tell us. How much is in-state? How much is out-state? In-metro and out-metro?
Attorney General Ellison.
I could tell you that we've only done two in-metro cases since I've been at the Attorney General's office that we carried through to trial. All the rest of them, and I think I noted the number of 33, have been in greater Minnesota.
Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair Ellison. And last question, I'll disregard. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Scott, and then we'll go to Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for letting me ask another question. Attorney General Ellison, recently I had some dear friends that lost their 27-year-old son to fentanyl poisoning. And you and I and a couple of other legislators had a conversation via Zoom, I think it was last year, about communicating to the White House, tightening up the borders so that this poison wasn't coming into our country. And I'm wondering if there was any follow-up on that, but secondly, have you prosecuted any cases where you found the people that are selling this fentanyl that's killing, what was it, 8 people a day or something like that in Minnesota? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Attorney General.
Madam Chair, because we only take cases that are referred to us, I don't believe we've received a fentanyl-related referral. But if we had the personnel, we certainly would. At this point, we're dealing with murder cases, rape cases, manslaughter cases, and that's pretty much all we can handle. But if we could help some, because I agree with you, Representative, you're absolutely right. The families need compassion. They need enforcement. They need aggressive prosecution, and we want to be there for the counties who want to call on us, but quite honestly, we end up telling them, hey, look, we can only take these sort of cases. And so we would certainly be available and open to it if we had the personnel. But I don't think we've had any overdose cases. I hear you asking about whether we've been referred overdose cases. And I think the answer to that would be no. We have? We did so. Actually, we did do so. Can I call over my deputy? Yeah. Madam Chair, this is David Voigt. He's the deputy for criminal.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record, and then feel free to respond to Representative Scott's question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is David Voigt, V as in Viking, O-I-G-T, and I'm a deputy attorney general. And yes, we do have pending overdose cases in two different counties. One of those cases is Pope County, and we also have a pending case in Renville County. Those are third-degree murder charges where providing fentanyl resulted in an overdose death.
Thank you. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that answer. I'm really very glad to hear that. And, but it's to me, and I'm not in your in your office, but because this thing is so epidemic, it just seems like a multitude of resources ought to be put towards finding out who these suppliers are and cutting it off. And so, Attorney General, did you make any pleas to the president or anyone higher up about closing the border so that we stop this flow of really dangerous stuff?
Attorney General Ellison.
Madam Chair, we are in constant communication with federal partners about the need to stop the fentanyl crisis. So, yes, we have had a number of conversations about interdiction, stopping this coming to Minnesota. But as you, as I noted, you know, there are federal law enforcement authorities and border authorities and a number of states if you deal with our southern border. But, of course, we have a northern border. So, yeah, but when cases come to our to us, we prosecute them, and we're in dialogue around this, both on the criminal and civil matters. We have several civil matters where we are using the money that we get to put into trying to relieve this crisis. So the answer is yes.
Thank you. Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Chair. And just to remind everyone, if you haven't gone back to look at 8.01, the AG is limited to what the counties ask for. And I actually wanted to bring this back to why we're here in Ways and Means, because we're spending money. And the reality is that if these cases are not, if the work isn't done by the Attorney General's office, then the counties are doing the work. So do we want the counties to have to pay for this? Because I guess we as a state aren't really responsible for their budgets. And so I guess, you know, from a saving the state money perspective, maybe that's helpful to folks. But the reality is we want the AG to be able to do this work for the counties when they ask for help. So I would much rather spend this money with the Attorney General's office, who has the experience, has done this, these levels of cases, than to drain the resources of our counties and our county attorney offices in rural Minnesota. So I'm very supportive of this. I thank you for being here, Attorney General. Maybe you weren't expecting to be on the hot seat. Maybe you always are expecting to be on the hot seat. But,
what hot seat?
but the reality is that's why we're spending the money, because this is who we want doing the work. And this is actually saving our county's money, and we should all be able to support that, especially for our folks in rural Minnesota. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Following up on the comment about fentanyl prosecutions, I guess a question and a comment. The question is, this is a request that was made last year and I think passed through the House, blocked by the Senate. Can you just describe the history of this request real briefly, Mr. Attorney General, otherwise?
Attorney General Ellison.
Madam Chair, from the moment I became the Attorney General until now, I've been asking for money to enhance our criminal division. One of the things I wanted to do all along the way is to try to restore us at least until to the point that we could help at the degree that we could during Attorney General Humphrey. Back then they had 12. This will bring our group to around 10 and some paralegals. So it's not quite as big as it was, but the state of Minnesota has a bigger population. Crimes have gotten more complicated. So we think that this is a good expenditure of resources. So we've been here asking for support for the last 4 years. This will be our fourth request, so thank you.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so then a comment on that, I guess. I agree that a multitude of resources are needed, and it sounds like the Attorney General has been asking for years for that. And, you know, we heard what prosecutions are being focused on instead. Murders, rapes, violent crimes, nothing that we would want the Attorney General to be setting aside to pursue fentanyl prosecutions. So it seems like this is our chance to provide those resources now and to finally make good what we probably should have done years ago and to make this happen. So thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Attorney General, for your terrific work.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Questions for the author to start off with, if I could. Representative Hewitt, Madam Chair, Representative Hewitt. In the first iteration of your bill, after it was engrossed, you had a couple of different lines that you amended out in state government finance to remove a conversation centered around waste, fraud, and abuse. Can you tell us why you initially had jacketed waste, fraud, and abuse as part of this request, and now that it's moved here, that it's no longer in the bill?
Yep. Representative Hewitt, and I will just say, I think we can take the conversation where we need to, but being mindful of why it's in Ways and Means as
well,
too.
We're getting there.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Nash. I appreciate it. Representative Hewitt.
Madam Chair, Representative Nash, I don't recall waste, fraud, and abuse ever being in this bill when I jacketed it. And, Madam Chair, we can refer to the chair of the committee to support that, but I do not recall ever having that. I know that in committee you tried to put something in, and we did pull it back.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hewitt, on line 1.7, the $269,000 in fiscal 23 being appropriated as a one-time expenditure, how many lawyers does that create short-term for the AG's office?
Representative Hewitt.
Madam Chair, Representative Nash, I could call the Attorney General back up so he can give you an FTA count on that, but realistically, what I understand, this is to get the program going. We're way behind on this. This is, Madam Chair, Representative Nash, the reason I have this is because I do have familiarity with what's going on in rural Minnesota due to my background in EMS. We're hurting. We're hurting in public safety. We are hurting in prosecution. Our police are hurting. This bill has been sitting here because of some political nightmare. I don't know why. I remember coming to the legislature and seeing this, and I'm going, why are we not helping the prosecutor? I'm sorry to say it, but this was all over my campaign lit. And I am frustrated with it because we need to get going here. That's what this is about. This is to hire some FTEs to start this process so we can get the bad guys off the street in rural areas. Plain, simple, straightforward. Even your own county. This same process was used to go after sex offenders. So if I can bring them back up here so you can get a count on that, but realistically, I think you have enough knowledge to know where how much you can get here.
Representative Nash.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hewitt, I'm not trying to be combative. No need to be so yourself. I'm just trying to ask questions of the appropriations, and you are the author of the bill. So moving on to line 1.10, you're asking for $2,021,000 for fiscal year 24 and the same for 25. As I understand it, in the previous committee stop, I think that comes up with seven FTEs. If I'm the Attorney General is nodding his head, maybe he'd like to come and help.
Welcome back, Attorney General Ellison. You're going to get your steps in today.
Madam Chair, Representative Nash, that would be seven lawyer FTEs and two paralegals. And I just want to be clear, the paralegals are very important to the process. So.
And Madam Chair.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I certainly understand that having criminal prosecution to assist is important. I asked in the previous committee stop, and I'm not sure I got the answer, but I'm trying to figure out how the formulary came up with this, how you decided that based on the demand that's being issued in the counties, because in talking to some of the members that were on the initial committee stop and in other conversations since then, they've reached out to their own county attorneys, and many of them have not found anything from a request perspective. And I believe, Mr. Attorney General, you said in committee, you'd given us a number. I don't remember that number because my notes are upstairs. I came from my car straight here. But how many cases did you prosecute in the last biennium along these lines, and how did you derive at this new number?
Attorney General Ellis.
Madam Chair, so since I've been the Attorney General, we've prosecuted 33 cases. Here I have a list that's accurate up to May 2022. So we've taken in a number of cases since then. And when I say these cases, I mean criminal cases, not civil commitments, not appeals, right? So this is just district court trial team prosecutions. Now, how do we come up with the number? We came up with the number, we looked at in the past at what our complement was. We talked to county attorneys at the meetings that we go to on once a month on Fridays. We had a number of conversations, and we thought this number was the right number. I don't know if there is some sort of precise mathematical formula to say this is the exact number of prosecutors you need. I do know that when we take cases, they usually start with a phone call, not a letter, and they'll ask us, hey, can you help? And so we'll say, well, we're really full now. We might not be able to do it until 6 months. Or sometimes we'll say, yeah, we can help. So it really kind of depends, but it doesn't lend itself to some mathematical scientific precision. It's based on the people who call. It's based on history. And so this is the number that we've come up with, and we're comfortable we can keep everyone very busy.
Representative. Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And either to the author or, well, to the Attorney General. Attorney General Ellison, I've seen some of your base budgets, but I also know that in the run sheets for your budget that there are allocations or money that you receive through agency partner legal service agreements. I believe last year you had $23.35 million. What does that money go towards?
Attorney General Ellison.
Madam Chair, the money that we in our partnership agreements, we are this is completely separate from what we're talking about today, but we have to represent over 100 boards, agencies, and commissions, and some of them we have contracts with so that we would literally bill them for services. So if you take the Department of Health and Human Services, they contract with us for legal services, and we send them a bill back. And I can tell you that it probably is 30% of what market rate is for legal services. And so that's what that where does that money go to? It goes to the operation of our office. It goes to cover the cost of the legal services that we provide.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll try not to belabor this, but you know that I will. In my office, Mr. Attorney General, we did talk about some of these new attorneys covering waste, fraud, and abuse, and then that came out of the bill. And I'm sure you remember our conversation. Your new staffer was with you, and we did talk about waste, fraud, and abuse. So apparently Representative Hewitt was unable to, but could you tell me why that now came out of the bill?
Attorney General Ellison.
Madam Chair, we don't specify any crime in the bill because the county attorneys are legally authorized to ask us to handle any kind of case. So it wouldn't serve the purposes of what we're doing well to specify murder or manslaughter or waste, fraud, and abuse or criminal sexual conduct or human trafficking, as you and I talked about that as well. So we just simply said this money will be for, and I have said repeatedly, and I've said on the record repeatedly for 4 years, this is for criminal prosecutors and paralegals to assist counties. That is what it's for. That is what it will be for. And it could include waste, fraud, and abuse. If they call us and say, we need you to prosecute a waste, fraud, and abuse case, we certainly would do it if we had the people to do it.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, you know, it's the waste, fraud, and abuse cases that I'm concerned with, and this is an appropriations committee, and we do talk about money. And here in the House, as you know, we are the first appropriations body, and sometimes the Senate forgets that. But I always am dismayed when we read about significant cases that make the news that do interact with your office. I believe it was, and I did get the number, I added a couple of zeros last week in committee, it was $500,000 that the Department of Education appropriated to you to defend them in the Feeding Our Future case. And I'm just confused, one, about that money, and maybe we can talk about that in a different committee, but it does concern me with the amount of money that ping-pongs back and forth, it seems. I want to prosecute criminals. In fact, that's all over my campaign lit, Representative Hewitt. But I like granularity. And I have asked for and did get some information, but the level of granularity I had hoped for more. And arriving at seven-ish lawyers and two paralegals based on a $4,042,000 appropriation. I think that runs out to what? Well, if you use that plus divided by 33 cases, you're spending roughly $122,000 a case. You know, again, we are an appropriations committee, and we deal with these sorts of things. I before we vote for an appropriations bill of this large, I want to see numbers. And I don't think it's crazy for us to ask that. I mean, I know that the majority party has the votes, and they can do whatever they want, and they can move things on as they wish. But at the end of the day, this is Minnesotans' money, and Minnesotans want to know how it's being spent and if it's being spent well. And, you know, I still have answers that have not been – or questions that have not been answered. But I think that this is an aggressive request, and I'm still confused as to why things come in and out of the bill, and things are not particularly well answered. So I'll be voting no. I hope that our team will be voting no. Again, if you can prop up the request with some good numbers, you know, I know that most of our members are very happy to see criminals prosecuted and taken off the streets, but haven't heard the demand from a lot of our members, and we've asked, and haven't seen a good business case for this. It seems a little bit like you're just kind of picking numbers and hoping that they work, considering also that you just told us from that legal partnership agreement that some of the base costs of operating your office is covered in those as well. So we have money in your general appropriation, and now this covering the cost of operation of the office. So I'm still confused. And to not belabor this, Madam Chair, I would urge a no vote. Thank you.
Further discussion to House File 29. I'll give Representative Hewitt the last word.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee. As you can tell, it's definitely emotional to me because I am a big follower, like Representative Nash, and I know he's doing what's best to ask the hard questions. But public safety is near and dear to my heart. As I argued with a city that had to buy a snowplow, a city outstate that was trying to figure out a way to get an ambulance, and they had to make the decision, do we need a snowplow or an ambulance? I think these decisions also sit in prosecutors' offices. How are we going to prosecute that case? And this is the answer. Simply step forward is that we need $269,000 to get this program going, and basically $2,021,000 in the legs of 24 and 23. I'm sorry, 24 and 25. It's very clear that the Attorney General has to be asked into a county. He does not, can't just go in there and take the case. And 44 out of 87 counties have less than three attorneys. It's a big deal. So I ask you to help Minnesotans. This is a public safety bill. Thank you, members.
Representative North.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hewitt, for bringing this bill forward, and thank you to Attorney General. Madam Chair, I'd like to ask a roll call.
A roll call having been requested, there will be a roll call on House File 29. And with that, Representative Becker Finn, would you like to renew your motion that House File 29 be referred to the General Register?
Yes, Chair, I would renew my motion.
Okay. And with that, the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Olson?
Aye.
Olson, aye. Vice Chair Edelson?
Aye.
Edelson, aye. Representative Garofalo, excused. Representative Akam?
Aye.
Akam, aye. Representative Egbaje?
Aye.
Egbaje, aye. Representative Becker Finn?
Aye.
Becker Finn, aye. Representative Freiberg?
Yes.
Freiberg, aye. Representative Gomez?
Gomez, aye.
Gomez, aye. Representative Hassan?
Hassan, aye.
Hassan, aye. Representative Heintzman?
Heintzman, no.
Heintzman, no. Representative Hornstein?
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Representative Howard?
Aye.
Howard, aye. Representative Cleavorn?
Aye.
Cleavorn, aye. Representative Preshaw? Representative Liebling?
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Lilly?
Aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Moeller?
Aye.
Moeller, aye. Representative Nash?
No.
Nash, no. Representative Knorr?
Knorr, aye.
Knorr, aye. Representative Novotny?
Novotny, aye.
Novotny, aye. Representative O'Neill?
Aye.
O'Neill, aye. Representative Pawlowski.
Pawlowski, aye.
Pawlowski, aye. Representative Petersburg.
No.
Petersburg, no. Representative Pinto.
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Farr.
Farr, no.
Farr, no. Representative Schumacher.
Schumacher, aye.
Schumacher, aye. Representative Scott. Scott, no. Representative Joachim.
Joachim, aye.
Joachim, aye. And Representative Crenshaw.
Crenshaw, aye.
Crenshaw, aye. Madam Chair, there are 22 ayes and 5 nays, and one excuse.
On there being 22 ayes and 5 nays, the motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Hewitt. And with that, members, we are going to go into recess until after the floor session. So just keep your ears on for an announcement as to when we will reconvene after session. And with that, we are in recess.
All right, Pat, which one of these do you want to use?
I call this meeting of the Ways and Means Committee back to order. Thank you, and I just want to say a big thank you to all. All right,
that's 13.
A little loud. Thank you. I just want to say thank you to the staff that had to work really hard to turn all of our packets around, get everything ready so that we could be here. And so thank you for working really hard to make sure we could get in and get going so we can get home at a reasonable time. And so thank you to all the staff who made that possible. And we're going to start tonight on the agenda. And I know there's a number of you here for House File 4, so we will be getting to that as the second bill on the agenda. But we have one that we're going to take up first as a member. A former member of this committee who's no longer on this committee. We want to be able to process this, and then he can head out for the night. So with that, we will take up House File 172, and we will have Vice Chair Edelson. Would you like to motion that House File 172 be re-referred to the General Register? Thank you. And with that, Representative Hansen, on to House File 172.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. This is the 2023 LCCMR bill, the Legislative and Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources. It reflects the recommendations from the LCCMR. This year's proposals are support are bipartisan and bicameral. Each received the necessary 12 out of 17 votes of the commission. The actual vote was 13 yes, 3 no, and 1 excused. The LCCMR includes 5 House members, 5 Senate members, and 7 citizen members. It appropriates $79.644 million from the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund in fiscal year 24 and $189,000 from the Great Lakes Protection Account. Money from the Great Lakes Protection Account may only be used for protecting water quality in the Great Lakes. The LCCMR makes recommendations on how that money should be spent. Article 2 contains policy recommendations developed by the LCCMR concerning capital projects funded by the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. The chair of the subcommittee who developed that bipartisan recommendation was Rita Albright from Bemidji. I'd ask for your support. It does not have any general fund impact.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. And just again, no fiscal note, no general fund impact here. So Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hansen, thank you for being on the committee. It's always good to see the senior member of the Dakota County delegation in this committee. Madam Speaker, or Madam Chair, members, I'll be voting no on this bill today. I'm opposed to it, but I recognize that there's a diversity of opinion on this from other members of my caucus, but I'll be voting no on your bill and wish you continued luck on this bill through the process, hoping that perhaps it can improve. Thank you.
Any further discussion to House File 172? Representative Acomb.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the author. I, as a member of LCCMR, just want to thank Representative Hansen for bringing this bill forward so early this year. Our LCCMR process was, it worked really well last year. We came out with a recommendation that was, as he said, bipartisan, bicameral, and really doing great things for Minnesota. So thank you. I certainly support the bill strongly and appreciate the author's.
Thank you, Representative Acomb. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hansen, you probably don't have this breakdown, but in the future, I'm wondering if you could possibly break it down also by what money is going to the University of Minnesota. On the higher ed committee, we're really trying to look at not just the jurisdiction of money that we send to the University of Minnesota, but there's many dollars in other areas as well. So that's just more of an ask. I didn't expect you to know it off the top of your head. That's a little unfair, but I'm quickly adding it up in the spreadsheet, but if you could have that in the future. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative O'Neill. The staff from the LCCMR are here. I'm sure they're working on it right away, and we'll get that information to you and the members of the committee.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion to House File 172. Okay, seeing no further discussion, Vice Chair Edelson, would you renew your motion that House File 172 be re-referred to the General Register? All those in favor, please say aye.
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 All those opposed, please say nay.
No.
The motion prevails, and House File 172 is re-referred to the General Register.
Thank you,
Representative Hansen. And our next bill up tonight is House File 4, Representative Gomez. And Rep. Perez Vega is also going to co-present the bill. So welcome to the committee. We're glad to have you here.
Gracias.
Great. And with that, you are a member of this committee, so would you like to make a motion that House File 4 be re-referred to the General Register?
Yes, please, Madam Chair.
Wonderful. Representative Gomez, on to your bill.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Before you, for your consideration tonight, is House File 4, which is driver's licenses for all. We have all, everybody on this committee has heard about this bill, I think, over many years, over decades even. We had a wonderful hearing on this bill in the Transportation Committee, and we heard from dozens of community members, business groups, agricultural groups, law enforcement, faith communities about the importance of this bill for many reasons, you know, for economic vibrancy, for safety on our streets, but most importantly, you know, for human dignity and recognizing the people who are living beside us in our communities and don't have access to this most basic thing that they need to provide the lives that their families need. So prior to 2003, you did not have to demonstrate lawful status, or you didn't have to demonstrate anything about your immigration status in order to access a state identification or a Class D driver's license, what's called a non-compliant license. That changed in 2003, and, you know, since then, you know, a couple years later, since that time, the community has come and asked us to reinstate the situation that had always been in our state for decades before that. So, you know, I know that we're focusing here on the fiscal implications of this bill, and there's a fiscal note that you'll find in your packet. The allocation for this comes from the vehicle services account. It's $2.3 million in the first biennium and $1.4 million in the out biennium. We're expecting, you can kind of read through what the assumptions are, but sort of expecting that people will come and try to access these licenses. There will be a sort of a flood at the beginning and then sort of a more modest allocation moving forward. I just finally want to say thank you to all of the people who are joining us here tonight and who have been here for years and who have been here for decades. And we appreciate your work and we appreciate your persistence. And it's our intention to, you know, to do what you've been asking us to do for 17 years and to sign this into law this year. And I wanted to give my co-author a chance maybe to offer a few comments also before we move on, if that's possible, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Gomez. Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Maria Isa Perez Vega. I represent District 65B. Which historically is known as the first Latino community in this great state of Minnesota that has been the home of welcoming not only Latino immigrants, but all immigrants from all areas of the world that has made an impact to the state of Minnesota. I just want to let folks know that we are living in this great state of Minnesota that it has a total of 476,556 immigrants, okay? That is 8.5% of our population, according to the American Immigration Council. And, you know, thinking about that population, about how much in taxes has been made, and that's over $4.8 billion
here in the state of Minnesota, with a number of entrepreneurs of over 19,000, close to 20,000 entrepreneurs who help the economy in the state of Minnesota. And a lot of those folks are here today in this room, have been for 20 years since this has been an issue in our immigrant community, not just our Latino community, but our African community, our Asian immigrant communities, our European immigrant communities. We are facing a human rights issue right here. Our citizens that are affected by this are facing public safety issues. It's not a matter of can we do it, because we've already done it. We had immigrants who are our colleagues who have become citizens, and prior to becoming citizens have received their driver's licenses before 2003. So I want you to just, when you're making those decisions today, when you're hearing about the numbers, think about the numbers that I gave you today and how that impacts this state of Minnesota on both sides. Gracias.
Thank you. Discussion to House File 4. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Chair Gomez, I just want to make sure I've got some preliminary stuff online here so that I'm correct with that. My understanding is the need for this bill is so that we can allow driving privileges for people in this state that are not U.S. citizens and do not have the authority by federal government to actually work or be here in this country. Is that correct?
Representative Gomez.
Representative Petersburg, yep, this reverts, House File 4 reverts us back to pre-2003 policy when you didn't have, when people were allowed to access driving privileges by proving that they could drive, by proving that they could pass a written and behind-the-wheel test, knowing that that has nothing to do with immigration status, but it's a basic safety issue for those on our streets. So that's the intent of the bill.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. I don't think that answered the question specifically, but since 2003, prior to that 2001, there have been a lot of issues in regards to identity and concern about the security in the United States, and reason why we have real ID, driver's license, and so forth, is to verify a legal status here as well. And since we really understand that driver's licenses are used here in the state of Minnesota for more than just driving, certainly the driving privileges is something that the state can do, and we certainly can accommodate that. But because the driver's license can be used for so many other things, and there is no indication on any of these driver's licenses as presented by this bill that it's different than any other, you can understand how easy it would be for people to get confused on whether or not it's legitimate for some of the options that grant those that have driver's license and are also U.S. citizens or have U.S. authority to do so. And so we tried in other committees to try to get a different view and a different direction. Even add some words that just says not for voting, because that is one of the things that driver's license can be used for is in registration, same day registration. That has failed. And so there's a lot of concerns here. Whether or not it's real or not, the perception has a lot to do with it. We're dealing with dollars that are in the fiscal note coming from U.S. citizens and Minnesota citizens and being used for this particular piece. And I think there's some concern about the safeguards that we put in place and have not put in place. You know, if it was talking about reinstating the driving privileges, that's certainly admirable and something that we can work towards. But doing it in a way in which it appears to be the same as others that have U.S. citizenship, I think is very dangerous and something that we have to really be concerned with. I'll be voting no on this bill for that reason, and because of the dollars that citizens have put up for this. But I thank you for your attempt and for what we need to do, and I think we can work on it later to try to get some of that done.
Representative Passan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have a question, but I have a comment. Thank you both to Representative Aisha Gomez, who's my sister district, and Representative Maria Issa, who's also on the other side, south side, west side.
That's right.
Being represented here. It's an honor for me to say that I do support this bill. As someone who is an immigrant, came here fleeing from a war-torn country. People don't get here because they are looking for some luxury life. People get here because they're running away from war. They're running away from corrupted governments. They're running away from famine. They're running away from drug warlords. They get here. And the people that we're talking about are our neighbors, our friends, our colleagues, people who live in our community, who are already here, who are already working, and are, some of them, risking their life to drive their kids to the doctor's office, to school, pick up your kids from school. So we're not really asking something impossible here. What we're asking is, can we have the compassion to say that because we have this privilege of like going to the, you know, DMV and getting driver's license, that this immigrant also deserve that right? And 4 years ago when this bill was in front of us, I talked about my family story. My mom, when the war happened, crossed the border of between Somalia and Kenya illegally because she wasn't thinking about legality. She wasn't thinking about anything else. She was worried about saving her 10 kids and her one grandchild. So when people, when you have to make the, you know, choice between saving your family and, you know, crossing the border legally or illegally, you're going to save your family. So I really would love for us to have the conversation of, these people are here. They're our neighbors. They're our community members. And they deserve the right to drive. It's a public safety issue. It's an economic issue. Just think about how many people will be working and paying taxes to us. So even if we don't care about the morality and humanity issue, it's about public safety. You want the person that, you know, if, God forbid, you have an accident, that the person that's driving that car to have a driver's license and B, to have an insurance. And if a person doesn't have a driver's license, they can't get insurance. So I really want us to ground ourselves in, even if we forget about humanity, to ground ourselves in public safety, an economic issue. And what's good for Minnesota? What's good for Minnesota is that we give people the right to drive so we can all be safe and people can pick up their kids from school without worrying about being caught. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. And I wasn't going to mention this particular story until I heard the very compelling story from my colleague, Chair Hassan. But my mother also crossed the border illegally. After surviving the Holocaust in World War II, she crossed into Austria illegally from Czechoslovakia. And so I think many of our, if you go back in all of our family histories, many of our family's histories will have that story. But thank you to Representatives Gomez and Perez Vega for bringing this bill. Chair Gomez had mentioned the hearing we had in transportation, and I just wanted members of the Ways and Means Committee to know that it was an extraordinary hearing for many reasons, but I can't remember in my over 20 years here a bill that had such broad support. How often do we have business and labor together, the faith community, law enforcement, and most importantly, the stories that we heard from so many aspiring citizens, especially youth. And so I think that there is a growing consensus around this bill across the state, and I hope everyone will join us, join Representative Gomez on this committee in voting yes for this bill.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Gomez, there you are. Representative Gomez.
Here's Halston.
My question is more from an IT back office perspective. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to comment on the bill at all as to some of the things that have just been said, but I have some concerns with one of the other bills that I think is also coming forward with the motor voter, and that this bill is going to create quite potentially some back office nightmares from an IT perspective as to who can and cannot be legally enrolled to vote as a result of motor voter becoming potential law as well. Can you address that and maybe allay some of my fears? Because
I
think that if you're going to do a bill, you want to make sure that it doesn't cause problems down the road. And from everyone's favorite Republican IT nerd, Representative Liebling smiled, I just have questions because I don't see it going without incident, and I don't think that you want that. So can you tell me some of the steps and things that you're trying to pursue? Because I know that some of the members would like to see something on a license, but it's all, I mean, you can print it on the license, that's great. You could put it in big, bold letters, whatever, but it has to happen behind the scenes in a database somewhere. And I don't know that that's been thought through. So maybe help me understand how you're going to achieve that.
Representative Gomez.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Representative Nash. Motor voter, is that automatic voter registration? Okay, thank you. I was like, I'm not on the elections committee, so I wasn't familiar with that term. So it's a good question, and it's a question that a lot of people have had. And so I have talked to the Secretary of State's office. The situation right now is that people of many different immigration statuses are able to hold Class D licenses in the state of Minnesota. If you are a recipient of deferred action for childhood arrivals, you can get a license, but you don't have the ability to vote. If you're a green card holder, you can get a license, but you don't have the ability to vote. If you have temporary protected status, for example, there are a number of different immigration statuses that people can have where they do not have the right to vote, but they do have access to a Class D driver's license, a non-compliant license. It just means non-compliant with real ID or enhanced ID. And so I did speak to the Secretary of State's office, and as part of the so I'm not the Democratic IT person. That's this gentleman right here, Chair Neuer, who will, if he knows, he'll probably help me out if I get something wrong. But I spoke to them. The way that the data is transferred is from the sort of license records is that only people who have demonstrated citizenship, that information is passed over for automatic registration. And so that's already, because we literally already have, I don't know, probably tens of thousands of people in Minnesota who have licenses, who go to the DMV, who don't have citizenship and don't have the right to vote. This is sort of adding more people to that group, but they're already accounted for in that policy. And I do just want to address sort of the voting issue in general. We had a pretty extensive conversation about this in the Transportation Committee, and Representative Petersburg just referred to it as, you know, people are able to use their IDs or their licenses to do things other than driving. But we have a system in Minnesota where you don't, I mean, a driver's license is not required to vote. What is required is to establish your identity and your place of residence. Those sometimes are on the same credential, sometimes they're separate. So that's why when you look through, you'll see primary and secondary documents in House File 4, which is sort of like the same thing as the Secretary of State's. It's like you show a an ID, and then you can have like a bill, or, you know, kind of, there's a number of other secondary documents that can establish your residence. But the third piece, which is very important, is the attestation that we all sign before we receive a ballot. And what that says is it attests that you are of legal voting age, that you live where you say you live, and that you are a U.S. citizen. And it is a felony to falsely attest to U.S. citizenship. And it is taken very seriously. It has hefty criminal consequences. It has permanent, lifelong immigration consequences. And so when you talk to the Secretary of State's office in Minnesota, or any of the, is it 18?
It's 18 states.
18 states that allow people to access driver's licenses regardless of their immigration status, when you look to decades of Minnesota history before this policy was changed in 2003, you simply don't see some widespread kind of phenomenon of people trying to vote intentionally when they're not eligible to vote. Because of that, you know, now it's like a receipt that we sign, and if you read through it, it kind of like lays it out for you. And because of those consequences, if you do falsely attest to U.S. citizenship. So I went a little bit further on the voting thing just because I know that there are questions and I think that they're, and I know that they're genuine. And so I I've kind of like learned more about it in the last few weeks. And so just wanted to share that. Happy to take any follow-up about AVR if that didn't, or about motor voter if that didn't get to it.
And we'll do follow-up questions. And I know we have a lot to get through, and we will take absolute a little bit of leeway here to go into a wonderful backstory, which is super helpful for the question at hand. But, you know, our goal here is to really focus on the fiscal and do that. And I know that, and I will absolutely get to, I'm just saying, I'm not saying this to Nash or Gomez right now, but just a broad reminder to the committee of why we're here as we go about hearing a bunch of bills that have been through committees where they probably have been really vetted, even though we don't all sit on them. So that's just a general reminder, not because of exactly what's happening right now. But with that, Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that was the lead-in to this question, because this is the fiscal committee, and we do have to appropriate money to make this happen behind the scenes. I'm sure Representative Neuer would agree with me that more testing is going to be better for a launch if this becomes reality. It should come as a surprise to zero people that Minnesota doesn't exactly have the greatest track record on creating software, and that there have Representative Hornstein's laughing because he lived through it as well as I did. I'm just trying to make sure that we're, if this becomes law, that you not only have thought about it, and it sounds like you have to some degree, but that you've also appropriated money to make sure that that happens behind the scenes. Because I think I said this, Representative Hornstein heard this a number of times, nobody forgets a bad launch in software. People usually get fired, curse words are said, new curse words are invented, and I just want to make sure that you're thinking through all those things. I have reservations based on my professional experience, and I hope that you're, by the time this makes it into law, if it does, that you've considered that and taken care of those potentialities.
Representative Gomez.
So, Representative Nash, you refer. You talked about more testing. I guess if you want an answer from me, I maybe need a little clarification. Right, IT testing. I guess they don't.
So we'll take this offline, so that.
Okay.
Because I'm getting the stink eye from the chair.
she would never, Madam Chair.
She's like, dear God, Nash, stop with the IT. But beta testing, making sure that before it actually goes live, that you try to break it a few times and then fix it, and then break it a few more times, and then you roll it out to the public. Because we've had far too many pieces of software here in the state of Minnesota that no one did it. They just sort of prayed over it briefly and said, well, here we go.
Or they knew it was good.
So if this becomes law, I don't want that to happen, because then more bad things happen.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Nash. Let's talk more about that. Thank you.
Thank you. And I was not giving Representative Nash the stink.
So you say.
With that further discussion, Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just for the record, I just want to say that I don't think you're capable of having a stink eye, Madam Chair. And that has nothing to do with me asking for you to hear any of my bills in this committee. It's completely independent of that. Madam Chair and members, I do think it's important to highlight what we do agree on tonight. The first thing is that the United States of America is awesome, right? We're in the best country on the planet. That we're such an awesome country that hundreds of thousands, millions of people every year want to come to the United States for hope, for opportunity, for a better life for they and their families. And that's a good thing for all of us to celebrate. There's a lot of negativity in our media, a lot of focus about what's wrong in America, but let's never lose track of the fact that America is the first, best, and original place for hope and freedom in this world. And it's an awesome country, and we agree on that. The second thing is that when it comes to immigration, make no mistake about it, that immigration is a net add to the United States of America. It really is the secret sauce that makes our country better than other ones. Across the world, entrepreneurs, risk takers, talent seekers, they come to the United States. They come to this shining city on a hill to live out their dreams. And it's a reason why we are able to consistently defeat our international competitors. And those are good things that we should be proud of. The bill today in front of us is here primarily because of a problem at the federal level. Federal immigration laws make no sense. They're broken, they're busted, and they have been for a long time. And as with a lot of things when the federal government screws something up, State and local units of government are left to pick those pieces up and to try to craft solutions to those problems. Well, that the federal solutions are beyond our capabilities, members. It does not, we don't have the ability to pass laws at the federal level. But what we can do in our conversation about these laws is understand the consequences they have locally. So in the bill, that the stated solution for this bill in the fiscal note, we do see that only 20% of those who are here in the country, in the state of Minnesota illegally, would even apply for these licenses. So four-fifths of the problem is going to be by the author's documents and the fiscal research is going to be ignored and left the same. Those are the assumptions that are in the fiscal note. In addition to that, whether we like it or not, no neighboring state in Minnesota allows this currently. So we are, whether we intend to or not, providing an incentive. We are providing an encouragement for people who are illegally in our country to come to the state of Minnesota. There are many ways to solve this problem. There are many concerns. I think there's a good faith effort on behalf of the author and those who support this to solve a problem. But there is, in fact, a better way. And I would hope that the DFL majority would choose, rather than using their legislative majorities to enact the DFL-only bill, is to work collaboratively with both sides of the aisle and to enact that, to pass a bipartisan solution. So, Madam Chair, I'll be voting no on this bill, but I would encourage the author and the DFL to please work with Republicans so we can have a bipartisan bill that accomplishes the stated goals of the bill without providing Minnesota to be a magnet for those who are in our country illegally. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I don't see any further discussion, so I'll come back to the bill author for final word on the bill. So, Representative Gomez.
I just would say thank you again, mostly to the community. Thank you for all of your work. This is our last step before this goes to the floor. And we appreciate you all being here and appreciate everything that you've done and want you to know that you are valued members of our community, and that's something that I think we can all agree on. And so thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you,
Madam Chair. Quiero dar las gracias a la comunidad que están aquí. I would like to give thanks, just echoing what my colleague Rep Gomez said, to our community that is here, that has been luchando, that has been fighting for this, and for those kids, the kids that are citizens that are out there who look at this as not just an opportunity for their parents, but an opportunity for them to be able to heal the nightmares and the traumas that they have suffered because they feel fear. They feel fear for something that is just unjust. And I really hope that the members of this committee on both sides seek the justice in trying to heal that trauma for these children, these great children who are born, whether they're born in Minnesota or, yes, this great country of the United States of America and other states, that their parents had the ability to be able to get a driver's license. Gracias.
Thank you. And thank you for everybody who came for a 5:30 hearing to be here. We don't often have a audience like this in Ways and Means, so it's nice to see the community really show up in support of the good work our bill authors and others have done over the years. So, with that, Representative Gomez, would you like to renew your motion that House File 4 be re-referred to the General Register?
Yes, please, Madam Chair.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say nay.
No.
The motion prevails, and House File 4 is re-referred to the General Register. Thank you. And our next bill on the agenda for today, and much as we like to clap, we don't allow for audience participation. So the next bill on the agenda for today is House File 90. And if you are leaving, if we could just have a quiet exit to the committee, as we do have a few more bills we need to process tonight. Thank you. All right. Representative Becker Finn, you are a member of the committee, so would you like to make a motion that House File 90 be re-referred to the General Register?
Yes, that is my motion, Chair Olson.
Wonderful. And you do have an amendment, so could you please move the DE2?
Yep, I would move the DE2 amendment.
Great. Dan, do you want to explain a little bit, or would you prefer to get it in the order first?
Let's get it in order, and then I can walk through it, Madam Chair.
All those in favor of the DE2, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say nay. The motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. To your bill as amended, Representative Becker-Finn.
All right. Thank you, Chair Olson. Committee, so this is the Public Defender funding bill. The amendment gets the numbers in the right shape so that it's in line with the governor's budget as we move forward. However, I would caution us that we've talked about bigger numbers, and the question that I had really put forward to the public defenders 2 years ago was, what is the amount of money that it would take for our citizens to have the right to counsel that they are entitled to? And for years, nobody had really been asking that question. They had sort of looked at it the way we look at any other budget item, as far as, oh, we'll ask for a little bit of increase this year, we'll ask for a little bit next year. And what we're talking about here is a constitutional right. And I want to be really clear about what I mean when I say that. The Sixth Amendment of the United States, this is also in our state constitution, but the U.S. Sixth Amendment says that you have a right to a fair trial and that you have a right to counsel. And further, Gideon v. Wainwright is a really established case from 1963. This has been upheld for decades, that this right to counsel needs to be funded by the states. And what we've seen over the years is that we have failed as a state to fund this constitutional right that our citizens have. So that essentially, if you do not have the means and your personal physical liberty, you know, whether you might be imprisoned for a crime, you are not receiving the counsel that you are entitled to under our U.S. Constitution, because we have a system where our public defenders are overworked and underpaid, and the caseloads are such that it just is impossible for anybody to manage. As hard as our public defenders work and as good as the work that they try to do, there's only so much one person can do when their caseloads are so high. And so this, we've been talking about this for a couple of years. This is finally at this point. We had essentially really close to the same numbers. So the important document to look at is this one that's kind of more of a horizontal document, which shows you what the current base is. And then you may have heard us talk about the $50 million for public defenders. So that's essentially, in order to ramp up, they actually needed a little bit lower number in the first year. And so then the ongoing number is 52.9. And that gets us to an actual functional system as opposed to the system that we have right now. So very happy to bring this forward again. It's been a long road. We've had bipartisan support throughout, bicameral support. The $50 million additional per year did pass the Senate floor last year, passed the House floor, and just really happy to be at this point, Chair Olson, and happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Becker-Finn. Representative Becker-Finn. Discussion to the bill. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Chair Becker-Finn, if you could just... I think there's a lot of confusion over the original engrossed version that came out of the Judiciary Committee, the House File 90, and the DE2, because the differences are, I don't know, it just doesn't seem like there's an apples-to-apples comparison in the way that the amendment is written. And if you could just clarify what this bill is doing, it's adding, my understanding is it's adding to the base appropriation, $52 million versus 50. And so if you could correct me if I'm wrong on that.
Representative Becker-Finn.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for asking for the clarification. So essentially, when we had this bill originally rejacketed, it was based on the idea of the way that it was written last year, where we were looking at a non-budget year appropriation for fiscal year 23. And so further discussion with the public defenders and their leadership, as far as there would not be enough time to put that in place to do anything in 23. And so this was the number that we landed on that is actually needed that would get them to that point. And we also wanted to make sure that we were aligned with the governor and the Senate as well, so that we can move this along and don't have to be slowing this down any more than it already has been to make sure we're funding this. So again, if you look at the horizontal document, it's 42.7 in 24 and then 52.9 is sort of the ongoing So a little bit higher than the $50 million that we had talked about last biennium, but that's the number that we're told that we need to get it to that point.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Further discussion to House File 90. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. I'm just going to dive down a little bit more into that amount. So it seems to me that this could have also been put in the governor's budget and the final budget for public defense and so forth as well. Why is it traveling separately rather than included into the normal budgeting process?
Representative Becker Finn.
This is one of very few things in our state budget that is constitutionally mandated that we fund, and we thought it was important enough that we get this done now. If we have the agreement, there's no reason to wait. And it's important that they know that the funds are there and it doesn't get bogged down at the end of session, so they can start ramping up to get this in place as soon as possible.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just will kind of keep my eye open for that, just make sure that how it fits into the general overall budget. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Representative Scott.
Just real quickly, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm happy to have individual bills pass through this body. We don't do it enough, so bring it on. Bring more of these. I love it.
Representative Garofalo, something similar?
Madam Chair, Representative, I just wanted to highlight, so you said you didn't want it to get bogged down at the end of session. Are you anticipating the end of session is going to get bogged down this year?
Representative Becker-Finn.
Representative Garofalo, you've served here longer than me, but I know I've seen enough in my 6 years to, when you can get something done, you get it done.
All right. Further discussion. Last word, Representative Becker-Finn.
Again, this is in our Constitution. I do appreciate the questions. I think it is important that we clarify those things and appreciate the bipartisan support that we've had to this point. This is exactly the kind of work that we came here to do. And yes, this is a little out of the ordinary and doing something as a standalone, but I knew this was a priority, and it's a priority in the Senate as well. So we're going to get this done and appreciate your support.
Thank you, Representative Becker-Finn. So with that, Representative Becker-Finn renews her motion that House File 90, as amended, be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, please say nay. The motion prevails, and House File 90, as amended, is re-referred to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Becker-Finn. So next up on our agenda for tonight is House File 150, Representative Pinto, the Child Care Stabilization Grant.
13 is going to be last. 150 scholarships.
All right. Representative Pinto, welcome to the testifier table. So would you like to motion that House File 150 be re-referred to the General Register?
So moved, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you. And you have an A5 amendment. Would you like to move your amendment before speaking to the bill?
I would. I move the A5 amendment, Madam Chair. Okay.
All those in favor of the A5 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, please say nay. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. To your bill as amended, Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So members, HF 150 is aimed at a crisis that was in place really long before the pandemic. Our child care and early learning sector could not possibly be more important to the success of our state, both in the short run for parents being able to work, employers to expand in the short run, but for our state in the long run, because getting kids off to a great start, there's lots of research on brain development, the importance of high quality early experiences, et cetera. Again, this sector was in rough shape before the pandemic, and what HF 150 does is puts some funds into that system just still in the rest of this biennium, so before July 1. Two components to it. One is that it invests in the Early Learning Scholarship Program. It expands eligibility for that program from birth up. This is something that's been discussed for a very long time and actually passed out of this house like several times, so we can make sure that families who are in need of child care and early learning right now are getting the support that they need through that. And again, that's just through the funds that are put in are just through the end of the intention is the end of July 1. And then also what this does is to take monthly stabilization grants that have been received by every one of the child care providers and early learning providers in your communities
There's been these monthly stabilization grants to keep the sector afloat. Those grants are scheduled to plunge by 50% in March, and what this bill does is simply reverse those that cut and keeps them at the same level they've been at through the end of the biennium through June 30. There's some pretty phenomenal statistics about the importance of those stabilization grants to providers. I think 96% have said that they've been helpful in keeping them in business. When they are in business and afloat, that means that the rest of our economy is afloat. This has gone to family child care centers, and there's great concern about those grants being cut in half. We want to keep them going through the end of the biennium while we put together the rest of the budget. So, Madam Chair, that's HF 150, and happy to have a conversation about it.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Pinto, can you provide the average base grant for a child care center versus a family child care provider?
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks, Representative Scott, for the question. So the grant is $430 per person doing this work. So if you're a person who's providing child care and early learning to a family, then it's $430. Maybe figure that Ms. Mockenhouse research will correct me if I say something that's wrong. But so that's that. So a center that has, of course, more people doing that work is going to get more folks. 430 times that number of people. If a family child care has two people working in the home, then that's going to be $860. It just depends on the number of people who are doing the work.
Thank you. Further discussion to House File 150. Seeing no further discussion, Representative Pinto, last word.
Yeah, I'll just thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks, members. I'll just note again, this sector is in crisis, like right now, and so passing this will keep it afloat as we consider how we can make sure that child care and early learning can be affordable for families, can be high quality for kids, and provide livable wages for providers into the future as well. And we appreciate your support.
Thank you. And with that, Representative his motion that House File 150, as amended, be referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, please say nay. The motion prevails, and House File 150, as amended, is re-referred to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And we are actually going to, we're not going to be taking up the last bill that was supposed to be on the agenda for today. We need to just double-check some numbers, so you can look for that to reappear on an agenda in the coming days. And I believe with that, the next time I will see you all is 10:30 next Monday morning for this committee, and we always can have call of the chair meetings, but we are not anticipating that between now and next Monday. And with that, we are adjourned.